From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, which is really the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love. And today we're going to have something a little bit unique for the show. Not necessarily just an entrepreneurial story, but a story of helping our backyard. And on the outskirts of our backyard is Lake Tahoe. And it's an area where we love. I know when a lot of times when I've heard people talking about Lake Tahoe, I hear people saying, well, you know, the great thing about Sacramento is we're halfway in between Lake Tahoe and the Bay Area and pretty close to Napa, but we don't really consider Tahoe part of the Sacramento region, yet a lot of it is just at our fingertips. So today on the show, I have the pleasure of having Amy Berry, CEO of the Tahoe Fund. So we're going to find out today about Amy, about the Tahoe Fund, and maybe we'll just have some fun talking about Lake Tahoe and what's so great about Lake Tahoe. And maybe there's some big challenges up there that I don't know about, but you know, I love Lake Tahoe. So welcome to the show, Amy.
Oh, Mark, thanks so much for having me. I love your entrepreneurial spirit and love. I mean, that ties really closely to all the work that we do every day at the Tahoe Fund.
All right. Well, then perfect. Can we dive right into that?
Sure.
Then we'll start and then we'll take it from there.
Absolutely.
So what is the Tahoe Fund and how does it tie to the entrepreneurial spirit?
Sure. Well, the Tahoe Fund, we're a nonprofit. Our whole focus is raising private funds to help get more environmental projects done all around Lake Tahoe. We have three focus areas. One, we want to reduce the threat of catastrophic wildfire. Two, we want to improve the health of the lake. And three, we want to make it easier for people to get around, enjoy, and take care of Tahoe.
Okay, so maybe we can, now as far as entrepreneurial, there's obviously, it's a tourist area. And before we dive into those three areas, is that why you're tying it back to entrepreneurial or because you're building a nonprofit and that's an entrepreneurial journey?
Well, yeah, well, that has been an entrepreneurial journey. So we just turned 15 this year, so we're still kind of the new kids on the block. But we like to think of ourselves as a pretty well-funded startup. Mm-hmm. We have a real entrepreneurial spirit behind everything that we do at the Tahoe Fund.
Oh, I love it. And and obviously if Tahoe is environmentally awesome, which I feel like it is, you know, that brings tourists, which drives small business and all kinds of entrepreneurship and even some medium and even larger business up in Tahoe.
Yeah, Tahoe is amazing. I absolutely love it. I wouldn't run the Tahoe Fund if I didn't. It's beautiful, but there are actually some major challenges that Tahoe faces. And it's by trying to tackle those problems that we really have to be entrepreneurial in our thinking.
Okay, well, let's start by talking about how great Tahoe is, and then maybe we'll go into the challenges. Is it okay? And then what your what your focus area is. So my wife and I were decided last weekend just to go to Edgewood and we just needed a night away.
Oh,
you know, she was stressed or something. It's like, well, let's go to Tahoe. And in fact, it was on our first date, we were on North Shore in Lake Tahoe. So we like doing that, especially in the middle of the summer. You go up there for a weekend and get cooled off a little bit. We don't ski as much as we used to, but it's just a great getaway, but let's talk about all the other great things at Tahoe besides the fact that I like it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's so beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to stand on the shores of Lake Tahoe and look at that lake and not feel overwhelmed by it. I mean, I've lived there for 22 years now, and my iPhone still has the same photos that I take every day when I take my dog for a hike every morning. I mean,
what's your favorite part of Lake Tahoe?
Oh, my God. That's like asking who's your favorite kid. I can't answer that question. It depends on, I think, what I'm in the mood for mm-hmm. the day and what the weather is. But, I mean, my favorite things to do in the summer, it's just tons of time on the lake. There's mm-hmm. nothing like being out on the water. So lots of wake surfing. I'm kind of a little bit addicted to wake surfing where you surf right behind the boat.
Oh, yeah.
Get out there with all the girls. It's really fun.
It is. Well, the water's pretty cold though, isn't it?
It's warming up. It's like, I think it was 71 when we were in the other day.
Bad.
So no more wetsuits. It's been gorgeous. It just, we were all saying this, a bunch of girls, we went out for a sunset surf on Sunday night and you just feel, it's like the best medicine that you can ever take. You jump in that lake and you just feel better.
Like, I like to surf behind the boats, but Tahoe is choppy. Like Folsom Lake is the one that's closest to me, and it seems more calm. And so when I'm out at Tahoe, I always think of the mornings are calm, And then the afternoons, it gets a little choppy. And as the sun goes down, is it calmed down a little
Traditionally
bit?
Traditionally not, but we were sitting on a friend's beach on Sunday night, and we were supposed to go out on this pontoon boat ride, and it was a dead calm, and the sun was setting, and we said, hey, what if we take the other boat? And it was like, you know, Tahoe, I think, inspires just adventure seekers in general. So I have this amazing group of girlfriends, and everybody's in for whatever adventure. And so actually Saturday night, we went wake surfing under the full moon, which was amazing. And then Sunday night, we're all sitting there going, we kind of want to go again. So we didn't do full moon surfing. We did sunset surfing. But yeah, usually you got to be on the lake by 8 a.m. and you're off by 10 because either the wind comes up or it gets too choppy. So
you think about the people of Tahoe. I have friends that live up there. A lot of people that maybe have a cabin or a house up there or something like that. They go there part time. But it's kind of like you go there. And I don't know if you feel this way because you live there, but it feels just all natural and you kind of want to let your hair down. You just all of a sudden kind of go into a little bit slower paced mode.
Oh my God, I love that you just said those words. So I know you didn't want to get into challenges yet, but you kind of teed this up. So the challenge that we face in Tahoe is that it's such a lovely place that so many people want to visit it. Mm. And we don't necessarily have all of the infrastructure capacity in place for the amount of people that want to come up to Tahoe. And you said you came up last weekend because you want to get out of the heat, right? Mm. We actually know that I think for every degree that it increases in Sacramento or Reno, it drives an X percentage more population up to the lake. So it was really hot last weekend and the lake was full of lots of people. Mm. And so one of the things we're working on the Tahoe Fund with a number of our partners is trying to figure out how do we make it possible where everyone that wants to come to Tahoe can come to Tahoe, that it's still a really good experience, that everyone that's coming up is having a good time, and that we're taking care of the environment at the same time. And we hired a creative team to try to help us figure out how do we articulate a culture that we can share out with everybody to make that possible. And they did a bunch of research. They talked to a ton of people. And what they came back to was this idea of taking it slow in Tahoe.
Hmm.
That if everyone just breathes in that mountain air, realizes what they're there for, and just slows the whole pace down, that you're going to have a good time doing that, and you're probably going to make it more enjoyable for everybody around you as well.
Okay, so when it's interesting that you framed what I said into how it might be a good way for us to all shift our minds, because part of the challenge. Okay, so I felt slow paced when I got there, but there was traffic. And so that when you first said that, my thoughts instantly went to, well, yeah, we went up Highway 50 and we ended up getting some traffic on the way there. And so I think we came up like Saturday late morning and ran into a little traffic. It wasn't horrific, but it was a little trafficy. And I'm like, oh, okay. And there wasn't even big concerts or anything going on, or the celebrity golf or anything. Like, you might expect traffic for that. But I was a little surprised that there was so much traffic, because I guess I don't go up there enough.
Yeah, well, especially a Saturday in July and August is going to be really busy, that's when everyone's like, oh my God, it's so hot in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. I know, I'll go up to the lake and take a cool dip. And you multiply that by thousands of people were having that same idea.
I should have got up earlier. I wanted to go to CrossFit and then, okay, I'll go right after CrossFit. And then next thing you know, it's 11 o'clock and by the time we get out of there. But if you get there early, it's not so bad on the traffic, right?
Yeah, it's better. I mean, shifting times of when you come. And I mean, that's the big challenge that we face is how do we make it easier for people to get up and get around Tahoe so that everyone has a good time? And some of that is, public transportation and shuttles and thinking about ways that people can get to Tahoe where it's not one or two people in one car. And it's funny, I mean, this is probably not meant to make you feel bad, but everybody in traffic complains that there's traffic without necessarily realizing that
it's partly my fault.
You're part of the traffic. So
yeah, that's a good point.
We hear this about,
I should have been in an SUV with like six people or eight people or something.
How many people can you come up with, and how can we create different ways to get to Tahoe where it's not everyone in their own car?
Yeah. Well, we just wanted that little romantic getaway, you know?
It's not so romantic in the carpool. Yeah, it's not on the bus,
yeah. So beyond, let's just focus on this issue then for a second, or this concern. Traffic's one piece, but then you get into town, and is that part of what you're identifying as a problem too? That it's that to move a little slower and just accept the fact that there's crowds of people? Because it didn't feel overly crowded to me.
Yeah, that's great that it didn't feel crowded. I think it's, you know, it's putting a number of different programs in place where we're better able to manage the people that are coming to the lake. So I think ideal scenario, like pie in the sky, would be a lot of parking lots that exist right outside of Tahoe. And you would park your car there, and then there would be really nice public transportation that would bring you into the lake. You know, maybe it's a cool trolley that you get to ride into. You know, different scenarios. Or you get to your hotel and you park, and you never think again about getting in your car, right? You get to Edgewood, and there's a shuttle that can take you places, or they have e-bikes that you can rent, and there's a path that goes all the way around the lake. And so we're working on pieces of putting this whole puzzle together. They're not quite there yet, but we're working on it.
Yeah, we never got back in the car once we got there. We just walked or took the shuttle, and it was nice. It was great. And we noticed there was a lot of people walking. Obviously, it's safe. It feels safe. It feels there's joggers and bikers and all this kind of, I guess, earthy kind of atmosphere where it just feels kind of like healthy, if you will.
It is. It's so healthy. I mean, being outside, we know, is really good for your physical health, but also great for your mental health.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. So now I'm picturing, so I live in Loomis, so I would typically, like, the fastest way for me to get up there would be go to North Shore. We like South Shore somewhat because of the hotels and stuff like that. If you go to up 80, you're dealing, well, you got, you know, there's stuff there, small towns. Yeah. So which is more popular? It seems like South Shore ends up get drawing bigger crowds.
Yeah, well, there's more hotel rooms in South Shore for sure. There's a lot of short-term rentals up on the North Shore. The majority of room nights are actually in rental houses on the North Shore.
Oh, interesting.
But there's a ton of inventory with all the casino hotels in South Lake. So
do you consider, like, Truckee is kind of you go through Truckee over to get to North Shore, but it's the Truckee's got its own, you know, got Donner Lake and stuff there. So do you consider that sort of part of your jurisdiction, or is it a little bit, you got to go a little bit further?
Yeah, I mean, technically the basin is, the Truckee is not in the Lake Tahoe Basin, but yeah, everything that happens in Truckee is tied to what's happening in Tahoe. So we work together. There's actually this new Destination Stewardship Council, which is a really fancy term that no one understands what it means, but it's basically 30 of us, including Truckee, everyone around the lake, trying to work together to come up with solutions for this problem. And one, I don't know if you guys went to Emerald Bay when you were there.
Not this time, but we've been there a few times.
I think Instagram came out and said it's the most photographed place in all of America.
Oh my gosh.
And so there's so many people that want to go to Emerald Bay. And if you've been on that road, it's very skinny and there's not a lot of parking. So we worked with the League to Save Lake Tahoe and El Dorado County and the Tahoe Transportation District and the TRPA to put a pilot program in place this summer, where rather than try to go to Emerald Bay and figure out if there's a parking spot or not and risk getting a parking ticket, we now have a shuttle service. So you can park at Camp Rich, you can park at Sugar Pine State Park, and then you can, you know, you get an advance reservation on your phone and a little micro shuttle picks you up, drops you off right in Emerald Bay. You can go for a hike, you can go up to Eagle Falls, you can go down to Vikings Home, and then you can schedule what your pickup time is, and you get picked up and driven back to your car, and you never have to deal with the mess that exists at Emerald Bay. So that's a great example of, we're trying things, it's a pilot, we need some more bollards on the side of the road to keep people from illegally parking, but we've been working with CHP, and they're writing a lot more parking tickets out there this summer, and we're just trying
to say encouraging
people,
that.
Yeah, write parking tickets so that people stop trying to drive their car there, because it's gnarly through there. So the shuttle is just a few weeks into its infancy, but it's doing really well. It's got great ridership, and I think if anybody wants to go to Emerald Bay, like, please look up the Emerald Bay shuttle, because it's such a better way to go.
Is that considered North Shore?
That is South Shore.
So that's South Shore. Okay. Yeah. So what's your favorite place in North Shore, like favorite restaurant? Where, like, if we're going up that way, where would you go to eat?
Well, I always have to send everyone to Garwoods. I know
I've been to Garwoods. Did we go to Garwoods, Scott? Yeah. That's what I thought. We did like a little company retreat up in Tahoe one time, or last year, I guess it was, and we went to Garwoods.
Famous Wet Woodies.
Yes.
You know, and it just has such a cool vibe. You sit out on the deck, and if you can come, you can come by boat. We have a great partnership with Tom Turner and Maureen, his wife, who own Garwoods. And actually, if you go, when you finish your meal, you'll get a restaurant tab, and it'll say the total and then a tip, and then there is a line where you can leave a donation for the Tahoe Fund.
Oh, so that would make it my favorite if I was you too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've raised over $100,000 from these donations that people are leaving on their restaurant tab. Gosh. So it's pretty awesome.
I had Tahoe Blue on my show at one point, and it was maybe 6 to 12 months ago. I got, like, see the bottle of vodka
there
up there. Nice. And I know that the founder of Tahoe Blue is very pro Lake Tahoe. Obviously, he's named his company after it, and he was all about, you know,
They've been awesome partners.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. From the start, Matt and I had lunch together, gosh, over 10 years ago. And he said, I have this idea. I'm starting this vodka company, but I don't want to just sell vodka. I want to give back to the lake while I do it. So he committed, I think, $1 for every bottle he sold.
Oh, my goodness.
Back to help Lake Tahoe. And so since that day, we've been tremendous partners together. The biggest thing that Tahoe Blue Vodka did was the 72-mile scuba cleanup a few years back, where Colin West and Clean Up the Lake came to us and said, we want to put divers in the water and scuba dive around the whole 72-mile perimeter of Lake Tahoe. Not all at once. It took them a year to do the whole thing. And clean up trash down there that no one's ever had access to before. And we said, Colin, you're crazy. And then he said, no, I think I can do this. And he did some testing, and we're like, okay, we're on board. And Tahoe Blue Vodka said, we'll put up $150,000 matching campaign. Or I'm sorry, $100,000 matching campaign. So we launched, I think, like end of November, and we said, okay, every dollar you donate, Tahoe Blue Vodka will double until we raise enough money to get these scuba divers in the water. And 16 days later, I think we raised $250,000. Wow, and it was so all cool. Because Tahoe Blue Vodka stepped up in a
and
huge way.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing, because that's an entrepreneurial story. They're not like a gigantic corporation. They're just an early stage company that's become popular, and they get a cool bottle for the vodka. But, and yeah, Matt, good man. I love that. That he's a business person that wants to give back is kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to build that into the ethos of your company from day one.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah. Okay, so Tahoe, though, I tend to jump around here, play off of some words that you have said here. Tahoe's clear. Like the water, you can see down pretty well in Tahoe compared to a lot of lakes. How would you describe it in terms of like pollution and stuff? Obviously, there's going to be some garbage in any lake, I suppose, but was it bad at one point? Now it's better, but because I've always thought of it as really clear.
Yeah, I wouldn't say pollution is a huge issue for the lake. What we're really focused on is lake clarity. And just as you said, they dropped this thing called a Secchi disc. It's a white plate down to the bottom of the lake, or towards the bottom of the lake, I should say. And people peer over the edge of the boat. UC Davis does this every year. They do it multiple times a year. And when you can stop seeing the plate is what they record the lake clarity for at that point in time. And so I think they've been doing this for over 100 years. You used to be able to see the plate down to like 125 feet. And then from the 1950s to the end of the 1900s, we started losing a foot of clarity almost every single year. And so it was caused by a lot of development that popped up after the 1960 Olympics, and then just a lot of sediment flowing into the lake. And with the sediment comes pollutants like nitrogen and phosphorus attached to that. And so that loss of clarity was really this clarion call to the federal government that owns 80% of the land to say, like, hey, we've got a problem here. We have to figure out what to do here, or we're going to be at like 30 feet of clarity, 20. So it went from 125 all the way up to almost 50 feet. And so this enormous effort was put underway by 50 plus agencies, partners, TRPA helping lead the effort to figure out how do we improve lake clarity. And so now they do these Secchi disc readings. They do it in the winter and the summer. The winter scores have been great, like down to 80 feet deep. Summer is still a bit of a problem. And that's mostly because in the spring we have runoff. And with runoff comes everything that was sitting in dry creek beds runs into the lake.
So it can be kind of like sediment versus garbage.
Yeah, we have some trash issues, but not really. I mean, it's not.
I think the people up there are more environmentally conscious. It's that type of person.
It's hard to be in a place that beautiful and make a choice to leave your garbage behind.
What a loser if you even leave a Coke can on the side of the road.
But what we're finding is they drop the Secchi disc in like the deepest part of the lake. And so that's where they test how far down you can be. But we kind of took our eyes off the ball because not that many people see the lake in the middle of the lake. Most people see it at the edge of the lake. And we are really starting to lose clarity at the shoreline. And we're starting to see aquatic invasive weeds pop up. We're seeing algae grow on rocks. And part of that is because it's warmer. And so the lake gets warmer. And so more bad things can grow in that warm water. But we don't have a really clear answer why we're losing clarity at the shoreline. So for Tahoe Fund, we're sort of saying, well, we haven't really figured out the problem statement there yet. So we're ready to kind of try different things and fund some different research to try to understand like what's going on there, so that once we know what the problem is, then we can bring all the forces in to try to say, okay, let's help with this.
It's interesting that the government, the federal government, owns 80% of the land around the lake, or the lake itself?
No, the land around the lake, yeah.
Wow. That's an enormous asset for our federal government. So we didn't sell it all away. That's really, really cool. Yeah. And now there's things to do like hiking and all this. There's state, or excuse me, federal parks, or what's there?
Yeah, it's, so most of that land, well, all the federal land is U.S. Forest Service land.
Okay.
So tons of trails. I think there's over 300 miles of trails in Lake Tahoe. Mm-hmm. But there's also beaches and visitor centers and things like that that you can do. So it's 80% roughly federal, and then 10% is split between California and Nevada, and then 10% is private lands up there.
Yeah. So. Now, does the federal government give you any funding?
So the Tahoe Fund, our role is to raise private funds that we can then use to help bring in public funding to different mm-hmm. projects around the lake. So in the last 15 years, we've raised about $30 million of private funds to help bring in over $200 million of public funds.
Wow.
And a lot of that is federal as well as the state of California. Oh, a great project I should mention talking about Lake Clarity. So one of the issues with, I was saying, you know, sediment runs into the lake is that a lot of the wetlands that are really like, think of them as sponges that are supposed to grab the bad stuff before it hits the lake, were developed in the 1960s. And especially in South Lake, there's the Upper Truckee River. So it's the number one source of water that flows into the lake. And unfortunately, that makes it the number one source of pollutants that flow into the lake, because as it goes through the river, they put an airport in the middle of that river back in the 60s, and airport runways tend to be straight, but rivers need to meander. So there was a lot of messing around with that river, and what resulted is a wetlands that doesn't function. And then they decided to put a former Motel 6 building right in the middle of that wetlands.
Where is that?
It's on 50 airport. In South Lake Tahoe.
Oh, okay.
Right off of the airport is... as you're coming into South Lake Tahoe.
Okay, so it's a Tahoe airport.
Yeah, the Lake Tahoe airport.
It wasn't not some other airport. Okay.
So right in the middle of this wetlands, it's sort of like they paved over paradise and put up a parking lot. They put up this huge hotel, and there was a restaurant. It's like sitting right in the middle of the wetlands.
And a Motel 6.
And the state came to us a few years ago, and they were like, hey, we think we can finally buy this from the family. And the Tahoe Fund board was like, yeah, we're in for $100,000 like today. Let us know when. And they said, okay, try to be a little bit patient here. And we're not very patient at the Tahoe Fund. We're like, okay, we'll be patient. And then eventually last spring, we helped the state with some other partners acquire that. I think they spent about $15 million. We put $100,000 in. We were the first ones in with that money that helped them secure a lot of those public funds to buy it. And then they came back to us and said, okay, now we own it. We got to knock it down and we need some more funds to help knock it down. So we went out to our donors and said, hey, this step one complete. It's acquired. Step two, we got to knock that thing down. And then step three will be to restore it all. And we need some more money to do that. And the community stepped up in a huge way. We raised a little over $200,000 to help the Conservancy. And just 2 days ago, the first building got knocked down on that property.
Oh, congratulations.
So that's major. That's and that'll great. Have huge Lake Clarity implications, because when you return your wetlands back, it'll soak up all the bad stuff and it'll keep it from getting into the lake, which mm-hmm. is great.
Okay, so you, in Klein Village, we're talking about you live up in that area. That's on South Shore area?
North Shore.
That's on North Shore.
Nevada side on the North Shore.
Nevada. I knew it was in Nevada, but so you technically, you live in Nevada. Then,
I live in Nevada.
Okay. And then, so thinking about, you probably spend more time on the North Shore then or South Shore?
Yeah, well, I mean, I live on the North Shore, but with the Tahoe Fund, we have projects all around the whole lake. Yeah. And so I spend a lot of time driving around the lake.
Okay, so what's your favorite? Okay, you mentioned Garwoods. Is that considered North Shore or South Shore?
North Shore.
That's what I thought. So what's your favorite restaurant on South Shore?
Well, you were just at Edgewood, I would say.
Yeah,
Edgewood is right
good.
Up there. That bistro is really nice.
That's where we had dinner, in fact,
And Garwoods has a sister restaurant down there, Riva Grill, so we love Riva, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can get a Wetwoody there as well.
Oh,
and
gosh. I've eaten at that
nice
place
meal
before.
Out on the water.
Yeah. I didn't know that they were affiliated with each other.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back into the problem. So one of the problems is the congestion, it sounds like, and one of the ideas is sort of rebranding at some level where you're talking about... hey, just slow down. It's Tahoe, right? Which makes that makes sense.
Yeah, level setting
I'm paraphrasing.
Expectations.
Yeah,
yeah, you got it.
And then the other problem that you mentioned was the, you know, the clarity of the lake and some of the things associated with that. So we talked about that. What are other, I guess, challenges that you guys are seeing that are part of your, you know, because it's got to be tough to decide what to tackle, right?
Exactly.
There's only so much bandwidth.
And we had that discussion about 6 years ago with our board, because mm-hmm. We've now funded over 220 different projects around the lake. And so it's really easy for us to kind of get scattered. And the board said, you know, let's be really clear about our number one priority. Let's do everything, but let's be really focused. And so we did a lot of research, and it didn't take long for us to figure out that the forest had to be the number one priority.
Oh.
Because if we allow catastrophic wildfire to come through, nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. People aren't going to be traveling up to Tahoe. They're not going to be recreating on trails. The lake is going to lose its clarity. And so for us, it was pretty obvious. Like, we have to figure out how to prevent catastrophic wildfire.
And I have to imagine that the residents up there, not just because of, obviously, because of the, you know, the water and all that, but I mean, the value of your home. I mean, I drove up there, and when was the last big fire up there? That was a few years back.
2021, Caldor Fire came awfully close.
Yeah, still, you can still see the devastation from that. With just driving
up. Come over 50, you can see all the dead trees. Yeah. So our approach is, okay, here's the problem. How do we define the problem statement? Once we know the problem statement, then we'll go solve it. And with Forest Health, we learned really quickly that the issue is we just have way too many trees in Lake Tahoe.
Oh.
So we funded some technology, Vibrant Planet, and they were able to tell us how many trees are in the forest. And then they were able to tell us how many trees should be in the forest. And so according to them, there's 24 million trees just in Lake Tahoe alone. Mm-hmm. And if you go back to the old days when the Donner Party used to drive their wagons through the forest, the density of how many trees would be on an acre, we should have 2 million trees in Lake
Tahoe. And we have 24 million? Is that
24.
What you said?
So we have 22 million too many trees in Lake Tahoe.
That's a lot of chainsaws to cut all those down. So what's the plan?
Yeah. So the issue is having too many trees is what causes catastrophic wildfire. So if you have trees that are nice and spaced out, then the fire, if it breaks out, which it breaks out, right? We have lightning storms and people are kind of idiots and start fires. The fire can stay on the ground, right? There's enough space between the trees, and actually fire is really good for the forest. We want good fire, but when you have a wall of trees, when the fire comes through, it can't get through that wall, and instead it climbs up. And so you might have heard this term, a crown fire, because the fire will climb to the top of the trees, and then it goes off the crown of the tree. And that's where you end up with these mega fires where the flames are like 100-foot tall.
Yeah, the embers just
And you can't put a firefighter in front of a 100-foot flame. There's nothing they can do about it. And so what we've seen through scientific evidence is if you thin the forest, it drops the flame length, and then you can fight it. So it's exactly what happened with the Caldor Fire. It came through the forest. There was so much fuel in those forests, so many trees, they couldn't really fight it. And then it hit a pocket of South Lake Tahoe where they had done some fuels treatments, which is where they basically get the chainsaws out and thin the forest in a very scientific and healthy way. And the flames came down to 10 feet, and then they were able to fight that fire and push it outside of the boundaries, and they didn't lose any structures in South Lake.
So we have 24 million trees. Did we just trim them back, or did we cut them down?
Well, we need to work on thinning them. We need to work on reducing the number of trees. And we don't want to clear cut Tahoe. That's kind of what got us. That is exactly what got us in this problem in the first place, was the gold and silver mines of Virginia City back in the 1860s. There was so much gold and silver to be had there that they cut down every tree to feed those mines. And so the forest grew back in a super unhealthy way. And if you look around Tahoe, now that I said this, you'll notice all the trees are exactly the same height, because they're all the same age. They all grew up at the same time, which is not a very healthy forest. And that doesn't allow sunlight to get through. And then somebody gave me this metaphor years ago, but there's basically too many straws drinking from the same cup. And so none of them are getting enough water because they're all fighting for that same resource. So having too many trees creates a huge problem. So we're trying to figure out, how do we reduce the number of trees in the forest so that we have a healthier forest? And then how do we put some good fire back on the landscape? Because trees love fire. That's actually really good for them. They just don't love catastrophic fire.
Well, it sounds like if 80% of it's owned by the federal government, that they should be advocating for that too.
So we're working really closely with them. So back to your, how are we entrepreneurial? When we saw this problem, we realized, say a Forest Health project costs $50 million. We could raise $1 million of private funding, and you put it in a bucket of 50, and it's kind of like a drop in the bucket. And so we asked ourselves, what can we do differently with our private funding that the federal government can't do with their funding? And we realized that there was a huge opportunity to bring innovation into the space in a way that has never been done before in Tahoe. And so we set up a philanthropic venture capital fund. We called the Smartest Forest Fund. Mm-hmm. We raised over $1 million for it. And we just started seeding little projects and little tech companies companies to use Tahoe as basically this testing ground to say, hey, let's pilot this here and see if it works, and we'll de-risk it for our federal agency partners. I often say, you know, if you're in the fire business, you're in the business of mitigating risk, right? If you're a firefighter, you're not into cool, new, risky things, right? You're like, I want the least risk possible. But if we don't try cool, new things, we're not going to solve this problem. So we set up the Smartest Forest Fund to fund new technology and innovation that we think will really help us increase the pace and scale of fixing the forest. And so we funded this company, Vibrant Planet, that rather than go out in the woods and try to map out a forest health treatment, now you can do it all online on a computer with LiDAR and synthetic LiDAR. We funded this company called BurnBot to come in and do a pilot. They have a prescribed fire robot, which we haven't brought into Tahoe yet, but they also have a remote masticator. So it's this machine that goes through the forest and chomps up all the brush and everything that lights on fire when a fire comes through.
We need one of those at Haneyville, Scott. I got a property that's got too many trees.
There you go, yeah. So, and the BurnBot is really neat. They took the cab off the top so that it could go on steeper slopes without it tipping over. And instead of somebody on top driving it, now there's on the side holding a remote control operator, and they run the burn bots through the forest. So we brought this to the fire departments and they were like, that sounds totally crazy. No. And we were like, okay, how do we get over this? And we said, well, we'll fund it. So we brought in with some other partners, the Martis Fund and Tahoe Trucking Community Foundation. We did a demo day. So we brought them in. They did 22 acres in Incline Village and we had 70 people show up, and it was really just show and tell. It was like, here you guys, look at it in action. It's not as scary as it sounds. And they ended up clearing 22 acres in 3 days. That would take a hand crew 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And they did it on a steep slope, which you can't put somebody with a chainsaw on a steep slope. And that was enough to convince the fire districts to say, oh yeah, this, we need this. This is a force multiplier. Like, this will allow our teams to do so much more work.
Are there some people, some things get politicized. Are there some things associated with thinning the forest that somebody would be against? Is that, because I've heard different arguments and I don't even follow that stuff that closely, but is there any argument against that for up in Tahoe?
There's a few holdouts.
Really? Why? Yeah. What's the rationale that someone would say,
I think it's,
don't trim the tree?
I think it's like, I think about it, right? Like, you know, I grew up as a kid who loved the environment and climbing trees, mm-hmm. and would often be called a tree hugger, you know?
Okay.
And here I am saying, hey, if we really want to save the forest, we got to chop down trees. I mean, it sounds kind of blasphemous.
Is that, doesn't sound like a, okay, so it would be, there's a little bit, maybe the left community, the environmentalists in our world might say, look, don't do anything to harm what's gone on.
Right, like, okay, we don't want to chop a single tree down, but the reality is, and the science shows, if we don't manage the forest, if we don't cut some trees down, we're going to lose the whole forest. So it's kind of like you're going to save one tree to lose an entire forest. Yeah. So it's a big mind shift, and I get that, but we're very much in the camp of, we've got to reduce the number of trees. We have to cut some trees down, which, every time you cut a tree down, you feel a little bit bad inside, but you know that you're helping save the whole forest by cutting some trees down.
Okay, got it. So, so obviously the trees and the fire is the priority. And then I mentioned the other two, the congestion and the clarity of the lake. Is there more, or is that the limit?
There's other issues facing Tahoe for sure, but for Tahoe Fund, that's our three focuses.
Those are your three focuses. Okay, so thinking about Tahoe and how it's changed, I guess, since my wife and I went up there 42 years ago.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, I know, we've been married a while. So that was our first date, and we ended up, ended up being a good salesman or something. Anyway, you mentioned, and what made me think of this is, you mentioned the Martis group, and I've been to homes in Martis Camp, and I've got a construction company, and we help do some work at one of the houses there. And it's beautiful. The amount of wealth that you can see has occurred and has been drawn to this beautiful place. Just people have moved there. And I know during COVID, a lot of people came to Sacramento and Placer County in general, El Dorado County, closer into Sacramento. But I know that a lot of people got second homes or maybe fifth homes or whatever in and around Tahoe and all these luxury properties that have been created. Is this a part of the group of people that you raise money from? Like these super high net worth people that maybe built businesses or they're CEOs of large companies and they want to protect their asset and their quality of life.
We are just super fortunate that we live in an area where there is a lot of philanthropy. I mean, people come to Tahoe and they just love it. And they're always looking for a way where they can take care of a place. Who doesn't want to take care of a place that they love? And so it's really nice with the Tahoe Fund because we're project focused. We're not about talking about policy or doing big, you know, we don't do a lot of talking at the Tahoe Fund. We do a lot of doing at the Tahoe Fund. So donors can look at the Tahoe Fund and say, oh, if I give the Tahoe Fund money, this trail is going to get built. This forest is going to be thinned. We're going to introduce innovation in a way that hasn't been introduced. We're going to come up with pilot solutions to challenges. And so we've been super fortunate. We're so grateful to have support of really everybody in the basin. So second homeowners, people who live there permanently, a lot of the businesses around the lake are great supporters, and really just anybody who enjoys Lake Tahoe. I mean, you can give a donation to the Tahoe Fund and know like it's going to make a demonstrable difference to Tahoe, and you're going to be able to see it. I mean, one of our favorite projects is the East Shore Trail. I don't know if you've been on that yet, but it's a beautiful 3-mile path from Incline to Sand Harbor. It's about 10 feet wide, starts on the mountainside, goes through a tunnel, runs all along the lake, has an 810-foot bridge.
You ride bikes
on it.
Or hike it? Or
you can walk it, you can bike it, you can rollerblade it. It's a great example where the public agencies found a $12.5 million federal grant for that project, and it needed a $500,000 match in order to secure that. So back in 2014, we launched a campaign. We said, we're building the most spectacular path you've ever seen. It's a huge safety improvement because we could get all the cars off the side of the road and all the people that used to park on the side of the road and jump the guardrail and do all of that. And now there'll be parking, and then there'll be a path for them to enjoy the East Shore, and also water quality improvements. And we went to the private community and said, hey, we need to raise this money to get $12.5 million of federal funding, get this trail built. And we raised over $1 million in 6 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
So we were able to build the path and then also start a long-term maintenance fund to take care of that path now that it's available.
Well, we gave shout outs to Garwoods and Tahoe Blue, and it sounds like they're kind of just they just give incrementally based upon sales and what happens in their business, which is really cool, and that's maybe more steady. But then when you need to raise a big amount of money in a short period of time, is that when like big donors come in?
Yeah, we were super fortunate. So we created Vista Points along the trail. So if you loved Tahoe, your family could reserve a Vista Point.
Oh, and they ranged from, so you branded, there's like 20, almost, yeah.
So you could buy a small Vista Point for, I think it was $25,000, and a big one for $100,000. And we did the calculator, and you know, we built the Excel spreadsheet, how many Vista Points at what price to get to the $500,000 we needed to get the federal funding. And then we realized, well, there's only 16 Vista Points, but more people are going to want to be in part of this. So then we said, okay, we'll sell benches with people's names. And then we came up with this crazy idea of these engraved trout that would hang on the bridges, and then these engraved bears that would be a bear crossing across. And so you could get a trout for $5,000 or a bear for $2,500. And then we thought, you know, we don't want this to be a project where you have a big checkbook and that's how you're involved. We wanted the whole community to be involved. So we said, all you have to do is donate $100 and your name goes on the donor wall.
Wow, that is so cool.
When we opened the trail in June of 2019, we unveiled a new donor wall with almost 800 families' names on it. And then as we opened the trail, people were looking at this going, how do I get my name on that donor wall? And so a couple of years ago, we put up a second donor wall with 800 more names. And this fall, we will put up a third donor wall. So people have until, I think, August 31st to make their $100 donation to make the third donor wall. But what's so cool is that all the money we've raised from, and you could still buy a trout. I think we're out of bears right now, but all of that money is going to the extension of the trail. So it's stops at Sand Harbor now, but we're already in planning and design with our agency partners to go all the way to Spooner Summit. And so all of those funds go towards that project.
I could see like the corporations too that sell, let's call it sporting goods into, or apparel into the typical Tahoe visitor, or maybe someone who lives up there, jackets and things like that, that they might want naming rights to something. I've just seen that with arenas and all kinds of things. And if the sign is big enough, you can get it and get it named after you. Do you have things like that you can name? You're probably not in a position to get a forest named after.
Yeah, we haven't quite named that, but we do have great donor recognition opportunities. So a big partner for us has been Vail Resorts.
Okay.
So they do the dollar donation program. If you ever buy a lift ticket or a golf round or stay at a hotel at North Star, Heavenly, Kirkwood, there's the option to give a dollar to the Tahoe Fund. And so we collect those dollars, and they've done amazing things. They did a triple match a few few years back for this beautiful Lily Lake Trail. So they said, we'll match every dollar up to $75,000. We'll triple every dollar up to $75,000.
Okay, when you said Vail Resorts, I was thinking of like Colorado or something. What resorts do they have?
So Vail Resorts owns Heavenly, North Star, and Kirkwood.
Oh, yeah,
so
goodness.
They've been great partners. So they've they helped us with the acquisition of Johnson Meadow, which is right next to Motel 6. It's on the other side of the highway. Mm-hmm. 2019, same kind of story. The family was like, okay, we're ready to sell this 200-acre parcel. It's right in the middle of the Upper Truckee River. It's the area right next to the airport that everybody's been staring at for years, saying, we got to restore this. And we went to Vail Resorts and said, we need $100,000 to make this happen. And they said, we're in for 50. And then Barton Health, which is the hospital right there, they contributed the next 50. So it's been great. I mean, the ability for corporations to really get their name out there while supporting huge projects has been terrific for
us.
That's
awesome. As you mentioned, Heavenly and North Star, one of the things I love, there's a Ritz-Carlton right next to North Star right there, and you can like ski right to the gondola, or you get out of your hotel room and you can just much ski. What's your favorite place to ski? Like, you don't have to go get a hotel or anything. So where's your favorite place to ski up there?
Oh, that is also like asking your favorite child. I refuse.
No, you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
I'm so fortunate I get to ski really everywhere. And so I think it just depends on the day and the conditions. So, an epic powder day, you can kind of ski anywhere and have a great time, I think. If it's more of a groomer day, I think the groomers at North Star are hard to beat. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a big open, big bluebird day and there's been a lot of snow, I mean, Alpine Meadows and Palisades are great. I think the sleeper mountains are, I don't even want to say it out loud because I don't want too many people to go there, but Mount Rose is great. They're also a Dollar for Tahoe partner, which is where they add a dollar on. And Homewood, I don't know if you've skied at Homewood lately. But
I haven't skied there in a long time.
Every run feels like you're skiing right into the lake. It's beautiful. Wow. And it's kind of small and you feel kind of like old school Tahoe. I know they're putting a brand new gondola in, so they'll have a high speed lift going in this year. But really, I mean, everywhere. Heavenly, I mean, the views from Heavenly, it's aptly named, right? It's Heavenly there.
For sure.
So really, I mean, you can't go wrong skiing anywhere in Tahoe.
That's right. Okay, so just last question. What did I not ask you that we should cover on the show? Is there, I didn't have any real plan other than, hey, let's talk Tahoe. Is there any word messaging you want to get out there, or is there something I should have asked?
Oh, I think you asked a bunch of great questions. I think just always, if you love Tahoe and you want to get involved, we'd love to have your support. Check out the Tahoe Fund. And when you come up to Tahoe and you are that person in the traffic, I think have a little bit of patience, have a little empathy, a little compassion. I think take it slow, like you were saying, is great advice. And just think about, come up to Tahoe, enjoy it. It's a beautiful place. Breathe in that fresh mountain air, jump in the lake, do all of that, and just keep in mind it's a little slightly slower pace. There's a lot of people that want to be there, and just be a little bit empathetic when you're up in the area.
Amy Berry, CEO at Tahoe Fund, thank you very much for coming on the show and just a fun story today.
This has been great. Thanks so much.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.